Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 475. In this episode, Scott talks with Steve Lee about developing today's web accessibility.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I am talking with Steve Lee from Open Directive. We're going to talk about accessibility. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Scott. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you because I really enjoy your slides, and I've looked at them for years and years on accessibility. And you actually consulted for a while and have continued to consult with folks at the Mozilla Foundation. So you have fingers in all aspects of accessibility with all the movers and shakers.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say so. Yes, I mean, there was a point a few years ago where Mozilla were very much at the center of the sort of open source web and GNOME accessibility, GNOME being the Linux desktop. And I was very fortunate to be involved with them at that time and learned an awful lot about the whole issues of accessibility from the user to technical side. So mm-hmm. It was a great time.
Is there a particular reason, hopefully this is not an inappropriate thing to ask, that you are interested in accessibility? I got interested because I was legally blind for a time.
Okay.
And then I had eye surgery. And during that time, I met with some accessibility experts in New York and used a screen reader and learned about high contrast and things like that. So it was a passion of mine. Are you anything other than able-bodied?
No. I think when I left college, I thought ergonomics, as it was then called, would be a really cool field to get in, but I completely failed to get into that field and did embedded design. And then I sort of had a bit of a midlife crisis thinking, what do I really want to do? And I decided accessibility was a good cause, very interesting. I do have some very minor mental health issues, I suppose, like a lot of people do. But apart from that, no, there's nothing. I'm coming up to 50, so I'm collecting, like we all do, various disabilities. Eyesight's fading a bit. Hearing's going probably.
Yeah, I've had hand surgery as well. So 25 years of typing in a keyboard, one appreciates accessibility and hotkeys and nice ergonomic mouse.
Yeah, makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Even just moving the position of the mouse can make a big difference, actually. It's amazing.
I've seen in your presentations that you feel extremely strongly about this idea of universal accessibility. It's not one kind of accessibility that you're interested in. You are interested in everyone having accessible web technology.
Absolutely. And that's part of what I was thinking about what we might talk about. That was I came to a conclusion that accessibility is – it's part of user experience. That's a big part of it. So when you're thinking about user experience, you need to think about the wider picture. One way of thinking of it is don't make assumptions about how people are going to access your content and use your functionality. There was a point when everybody had a desktop with a mouse, keyboard, and a 17-inch monitor in those days, because we made assumptions and a lot of people with disabilities suffered as a result. Now we're in a situation where there's this plethora of devices with different form factors used in different contexts. People want to do things, have their own preferences, and suddenly accessibility is sort of a big problem for everyone. And I guess that's where I'm coming at. The phrase that came to me is personalization. That's really part of what it's about. A few years ago, there was a big debate, and people with disabilities said, no, accessibility should be about making sure we're not left out in the dark, which did happen, of course. But I think, I mean, that is absolutely critical that doesn't happen. But also, there's this bigger issue of making sure everybody can access everything.
You know, I think it's a bit of a cliche, but I have to say, when you meet someone who is not able to get to your content, it has a tendency to make one passionate towards getting people that content. I spoke to a number of deaf people who enjoy this podcast. So we have gone out of our way to have transcripts made.
Fantastic.
And I've done that with my YouTube videos as well. I have two good friends who are blind, and every single time I write a blog post, I think about the alt tag, and sometimes I'll bury a little secret note in there for my blind readers as well. I think that for the most of us, we think of alt tags. That's kind of like the most simplistic thing when we think of accessibility is like, oh, that picture should have a description.
Yep. Yeah, that is one of the common ones. And part of that, I guess, is going back to this concept of accessibility for everyone, the visually impaired group, if you can call them a group, because everybody's different in a combination of disabilities, of course. But they've had a loud lobbying force, and a lot of the accessibility effort, shall I say, has been to make sure that visually impaired are well catered for, but there are other areas as well. And sorry, the alt tag obviously is for giving an alternative description to images, and that's part of not making assumptions. Again, you can't assume how people are going to consume your content. Some people won't be looking at it, so will they have a good experience? And that's one of a number of different things that are. There's some easy things you can do to make sure that everything is accessible to as wide a number of people as possible. Mm-hmm. A couple of things I'd like to say that people should do is throw away the mouse. Try and use just the keyboard. That is a really good one. Can you get around your web app or your site with just the keyboard? We're using the tab key and the space key to move and to select.
And is that because of the fine motor control involved in positioning the mouse is not available to everyone?
Yes, well, it works in a different – the mouse is sort of like, if you're fairly technical, is a sort of random access. You can access anywhere on the screen. But if you're using the keyboard, you have to move sequentially through it. And the point with the keyboard is, one, there are some people who just like to use their keyboard. They don't like to use a mouse. Power users, if you like. And I'm one of those people who tend to want to use the keyboard more. And also, lots of different assistive technologies, which are ways of that people with disabilities may access the computer. They hang off the keyboard. The common one is the screen reader. So blind people, they can't use a mouse to point anywhere on the screen and they'll see what's going on. So you have to tab with the keyboard around. And what happens is it speaks out information about where you are at that particular point in the user interface. So they're probably the two main reasons. There are other assistive technologies, perhaps those used for people with physical disabilities, which automatically move a cursor around and they can select it with a simple, just press a switch type operation. Mm-hmm. Again, that will want to drive your web app or website through keyboard commands. So it's a really good, it picks, if you can get a really good experience with just a keyboard, you're going to hit a lot of different users.
I think the thing that you said that resonated with me the most was the assumption of random access. That's what
right. Okay.
Nailed
so
it for
a bit
me.
Geeky
like the,
perhaps.
But the mouse is one aspect of that, but the assumption that the individual can access any aspect of it, anything that's on the screen, assumes that there's a touch screen, that they can move their arm in a certain way.
Yep.
But if they're filling out a form, as you're hitting tab, if you have an element on the screen that doesn't really need to have focus, but you didn't think about that ahead of time as a programmer, then that's a roadblock. That's just an unnecessary element that's sitting there with focus and there's no reason for it.
Yes, that's quite right. Yes. There's a lot of complexity about that, of course, but if you can get the basic, and one of the things is don't mess with a tab index. You can set a tab index on everything on a website. The default tab index is good. It does tend to follow the document structure, but normally that's good. If you start messing with a tab index, for some particular reason, you can really make the user experience horrible for people with assistive technology. So that's
now when I use different controls, like just radio buttons and regular buttons, those are standard HTML controls. But often I'll have a boss who wants a fancy date time drop down. Is that a bad thing for accessibility?
Yes and no. If you use a built-in browser controls, if you use the controls in a framework which has had accessibility baked into it, then you get all of the accessibility in there. So the keyboard access will work. It will work with touch. It will work with, or it should work with touch. It will work with mouse pointers. It does depend on, you know, how much effort's been put in there. Microsoft at the moment, I'm very impressed with their effort to handle multiple devices and input modes. It is really looking very interesting at the moment. But there's a, you know, there's an industry interest in this, mainly because of touch screens. But the point is, as soon as you start creating your boss says he wants a fancy widget, I don't know, say a circular menu or something like that, and you end up designing that, creating it from lots of div tags and bits and pieces, you're going to have to do all that accessibility work yourself. And there's lots of edge cases and gotchas that you won't find until they come in as bugs. So you really, you know, use the standard controllers if you can. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do the fun stuff, but and web components, of course, is an area where there's lots of excitement at the moment. They're not really ready for production use, but they will come. I think there's so much noise about them. But the point is, there is you can basically create a WYSI widget, and encapsulate it in a nice little piece of functionality that anyone can include. But of course, if there's all these widgets out there and they haven't had accessibility love put into them, then there's going to be an issue for your users.
So in the old days of Win32, I know that you had some Win32 experiences as well.
Yes.
So I think
we come from a
similar generation in that respect. We would have what we called owner draw controls.
Here's a rectangle.
Go nuts.
Yeah, and WM paint messages and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly, similar thing exists on the web, doesn't it? If I decide to go and do something beautiful in a canvas, what is that, in air quotes, what does that look like to an accessibility? Is that just a black hole in the middle of the page?
Yeah, that's a really good question. If you go back in the early days of accessibility, when every program just drew on the screen as it liked, there was no way for assistive technology. So the concept of assistive technology, if you like, is it takes the user interface you've got and modifies it in a way for a user. And the classic case is a screen reader. So it transfers what's on the screen into text as the user moves around. That's a transformation on your user interface. In order for that to work, it needs to know what the user interface is like, what its structure is, that here's a button with some text on it so that it can read it to the user. When everybody was just writing to the screen as a bitmap, there's no way that you could work that out. And assistive technology writers had a hell of a job to try and they had tricks called virtual buffers, where they tried to capture everything the screen was doing and figure out what was going on. And it's exactly the same with the canvas on the web now. If you decide to write a text editor that does everything in the canvas, there's no way you can get it a text because it's just a bunch of pixels on the canvas. And it does have some accessibility extensions now to add that information back in. Mm-hmm. But yes, a canvas is sexy and you can do some amazing stuff, especially if you're using ASM and the WebGL, all these graphic stuff. It's really like the good old days of graphics on the screen.
I think that a blind web browser person can probably appreciate the technology behind like Quake in a browser, but they're not as much interested in that.
No, sure.
But they would like to get their email and do their banking. Mm-hmm. What kind of tooling is there to validate something from a technical perspective?
Okay, well, there's a whole range of stuff really. I would say that you can't beat real user testing because people do crazy stuff and it's, you know, if you see a screen reader user, that's incredible. You can't tell what they're doing. They're so fast and this. So that's the first thing to say. But there are stuff to get the technical validation in there to make sure that you've done all the stuff you can to possible. There are online validators. W3C have one. Mm-hmm. The new kid on the block is Tenon, which is a very interesting one. That's designed for modern workflows. So if you're using Grunt and Gulp and all that sort of stuff to build your front end, then it will hook in nicely with that. There are also some accessibility toolbars. There's one from the Passiello group. That's a Windows only one, I think. Mm-hmm. But there's other things you can do. I mentioned using the keyboard, but most operating systems have a built-in narration system. Windows has narrators. There's VoiceOver on iOS and OS X, and Orca is the one on Linux. And you don't need to be a major screen reader user, but you can play around with those and get an idea of what it's like to operate that way. So,
you know, and I really think that people need to do this. People need to actually give this a try. And, you know, I think you're very kind to say we should, you know, you play with that and get an idea of what it works like. Seriously, turn off your monitor. Pick a random Friday, call it Accessibility Friday, turn off your monitor and try to get something done for 8 solid hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I did this with
JAWS a while back. Close your laptop and just listen. And you'll watch, they will listen to it in a headphones. And once, when I saw a number of people, I worked with the accessible, they were called the, Associated Blind of New York. They had a whole department where they would go and do web testing, and they speed up the audio so fast that it's unintelligible.
Right.
But
yes.
They can understand it.
And what's very interesting is the very old screen readers, which sounded very robotic, rather than these really natural voices, which you can get now, are preferred because you can speed them up, and because it hasn't got all the inflections, they work really fast and rapidly. But amazing, isn't it?
We can think about it as something binary, either sighted or blind, but there's so many things in between. My boss is colorblind, and he'll red-green colorblind. He'll have issues, or you might need high contrast. So it isn't just hey, we handled it for the blind. It's done, is it?
Absolutely not, no. And interesting enough, 10% of the male population are colorblind, red-green. So that's a big number, really. And yet it's so easy not to think about your the contrast or the colors
that
you use.
Still, we love to put circles that are red and green to...
That's right.
I always joke about red-green refactor or gray-gray refactor, depending on your level of colorblindness.
Yes, that's right.
So these toolbars, they're for the sighted, though, to validate that something has been annotated correctly?
They're a test tool. So they allow you to browse around a website or indeed a web app and perform various tests. The one I was thinking about, the Paciello Group one, was Steve Faulkner, who's the mighty Steve Faulkner. You always have to say the mighty before his name. he does a lot of, or they do a lot of web validation for customers, corporate customers. And obviously, there's a lot of things you do again and again. So he created a toolbar for his own use. But so it has in it a color contrast checker and things like that, a whole bunch of tools. Yeah, and so the whole bunch of tools like that, you can check. One of the important things to get, again, one of these low-hanging fruit, is get the structure of your document really clear by using some of the new HTML5 tags or there's landmarks in Way Aria.
I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, SyncFusion. SyncFusion's mobile, web, and desktop controls are trusted worldwide. But did you know that they also provide educational resources? The Succinctly series of free ebooks has great content on popular technologies in 100 completely ad-free pages. These books are written by industry experts, and topics range from Cassandra to Node.js to Windows 8.1. They are available for Kindle apps and in PDF format, and new ebooks are released each month, so browse their library at SyncFusion.com to download your free ebook today. So you said Aria, if you don't mind, let's dig into that, because when I was coming up, there was a couple of attributes. There was the alt tag in the United States. There was a thing called Section 508 that was a checklist. But now, what is Aria? A-R-I-A.
Okay. So Aria was effectively an extension to HTML, and now it actually is effectively part of it, which is good. But the for accessibility purposes, and this assistive technology that I mentioned, you sometimes have to get a little bit more information so that it can pass it on to users. One of the important things for screen reader users is the structure of the document so that they can navigate around really quickly. In fact, screen readers, and it would be really useful for sighted users, can give them a list of all the headings and they can move from one heading to the other. In fact, one web browser did do that once, I seem to remember. But so there's these various another thing is, if something pops up in the corner of the screen, if you're sighted, you see it, although often it disappears before you read it. That's another accessibility issue. But if you're blind and you're moving around the keyboard and it's speaking what you're saying, it won't be speaking something that pops up, so you may miss it completely. So the extra tags which allow you to say, let the user know about this when I display it. So it's really just a whole bunch of things that allow you to improve the accessibility just with a few little tags, and they're quite easy to apply.
So in that example right there, let's say that you had a div that popped up. We would call that a piece of toast that popped up somewhere. Yeah. That div,
took me ages to find out what that meant.
Yeah, yeah. So you have a piece of toast that pops up, and a div that maybe goes and becomes visible. That is an assertion that's happening, and someone's going to notice that because their eye will be drawn there. But if I understand correctly, in ARIA, you would say that the role of this div is one of an alert. And then you would say that this is an assertive alert, indicating that you want it spoken immediately. You want to interrupt the user and say, hey, you went offline or whatever happened.
That's it. Yeah, there's two aspects. There's one is to say it is an alert. And then because the user, again, it's a user preference partly, because the user can say, I only want to hear really important alerts. I don't want to be interrupted. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if it speaks absolutely everything, it's hard for the user to filter it out. And so there's this lovely term. You can say it's ARIA. I can't remember the attribute name, but it's polite.
ARIA live.
Live, thank you. polite is one of the values, which says don't interrupt what the user's doing unless they're doing nothing, and then you can tell them.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the folks that are listening who don't understand what we've just been saying as far as ARIA, it's WAIARIA. It's the Web Accessibility Initiative, and ARIA stands for what?
Ah, there you got me. Accessibility Rich. Rich internet applications.
Exactly.
I think that's it. It was comes from the days where we had dynamic HTML and rich, rich.
So it's accessible, rich internet applications. So when we say ARIA, we're talking about all of those attributes and all the specification around that. Now, these are almost like a sidecar to all the different tags that you can have within HTML5, right? So.
Yes and no, except some of them have come in like, for example, one of the earlier tags was required, which allow, when you've got a form, some of the fields you want that are required, you need a user to fill them in. And there was an ARIA attribute called required, and now that's gone into HTML5, so you can without, but initially, because it was an extension, the way ARIA was, you know, extra tags that you could use, and gradually So a lot of them are getting moved into the main spec. So
we shouldn't think of it. It seems like we shouldn't think about it as a sidecar. This is HTML5, and it should be required in any basic document.
Absolutely, I think so. And given that there isn't such a thing as HTML5 anyway, it's a mass of different specs and technologies and APIs, I think that's a very valid way of looking at it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've found in creating forms that just the least that we can do is using described by. So if you have a text box, and then some div or label somewhere, just to say, hey, this text box has a relationship with this div or this other piece of text. So then when you click on it, you can pop something up that explains what is this thing.
Yes, there's a description tag, and there was a big furore about that one recently. That's long desk, and it's something mixed up. But yeah, so there's two. There's label by is one of the good ones, and that's, again, it's just getting the structure of your markup good. And there's actually for excited users, if you use labels properly to label your controls, people can click on the labels as well as the actual control and start interacting with them.
In this world of, like you said, DHTML or, you know, really, really JavaScript rich applications, there's a lot of what I refer to generally as accordions, you know, things that open and close. You know, when we were, you know, in the early 90s, it was like, oh, the first tree control we'd ever seen. Oh my goodness, it can collapse and expand. But now all sorts of divs are expanding and collapsing. How do you describe that to with ARIA?
You got me there, Scott.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to understand is there's ARIA expanded and ARIA hidden.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah.
Are these things that are that the screen reader understands and then expresses in some way to the user?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the whole point of all the ARIA tags is that they pass information on to the screen readers. And has been sorry, I'm not directly answering your question. I'm going to sort of a bit.
No, that's okay, because I'm interested in the context, because I assume that every screen reader has a style of presenting the information. There's no standard way. And just as you made the really interesting point, which wasn't obvious to me, was that the user can express their level of interest. Like, maybe I only want alerts, or maybe I only want I want everything. I want verbose.
So, making all this, there's a stack of technology here, and making it all work involves collaboration. And we're moving to a world now where, fortunately, the open standards and open source, that's happening. Whereas the assistive technology makers used to get virtually no help from the operating system vendors or the browser people, you know, so they had to go off and do their own thing. So when it comes to something like the ARIA Expanded, the spec is developed. The spec isn't developed in isolation, in that you need to work with the browser developers. And Mozilla have been one of the good ones, and now with Edge, we're seeing Microsoft joining in, and Google as well, and WebKit. And often these things get tried in the browsers, but also the assistive technology manufacturers need to be involved in it as well. And it's a two-way street, because the assistive technology manufacturers will say, hey, our users really need this feature, but we can't do it. So it might get included. Hopefully they're involved in the spec standards bodies. And the browser people are also on those working groups. So everybody needs to work together, basically, and to get a good experience for the users is what this is all about, of course.
And the ARIA, the thing that I thought was most interesting about ARIA, and it really is actually, of all of the different specs, one of the easier ones to read, frankly, I think. It's actually quite interesting to read.
And there's some good, very good support materials as well. That's worth saying, actually. If you go to the WAI landing page, which is the place to go to pick up all these specs, not only have you got the specs and WCAG, which is like the master spec telling you how to do everything.
WCAG.
CAG, yeah, which stands for Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. There's also one for web authoring tools as well, but that doesn't get much attention. That's a very long, detailed spec, and it's not something you want for bedtime reading. But there are a number of techniques documents which say this is how you apply this stuff. And now also the educational branch, which is Shadi and Eric, are from the W3C, are creating a number of great tutorials. So the stuff there. There's also WebAIM, another company worth mentioning, having some very good introductory information.
And I looked at a lovely example from Hayden at HaydenWorks. This practical ARIA examples, and it's basically like, you know, here's a hamburger, like the, you know, the legendary hamburger menu. What exactly should that look like marked up? And here's a drop down. And this got me into the ARIA spec. And I was reading about roles. Yeah. So roles are where you say this div is a toolbar and that div is an alert dialog. And then that's the magic piece of context that people need.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's going back to your question about, you know, if your boss asks you to make something up. You can do it. You can create a menu out of a bunch of divs. And if you want to make your life really hard, you probably use list elements or something. But they're not, conceptually, they're not a list. They're a menu. But the assistive technology, the screen reader, can't know that. And so this is one of the key points of ARIA, is one of the key little bits of extra information that it gives the assistive technology, is that what this bunch of divs that you know what they are, the user, the visual sighted user knows what they are, because you can intuit it by just interacting with it. But they say the non-visual user won't, of using a screen reader, won't know, because it will just be, they'll just be told it's a bunch of divs. So this extra little hint or bit of information lets them interact with it, lets the screen reader process it and provide a good interaction for the user.
Something else that you were passionate about that I'd like you to explain to me is this global public inclusive infrastructure.
Right. Okay. So this is so one of the problems, and we mentioned that all these players need to work together to get a good user experience for users. But it's not, there's such a long way, we're such a long way short of where we'd like to be. So there's a real need to help everybody work together. And the GPII is this big, massive vision to make accessibility work, really. And there are three areas to it. One is to help users who often don't aren't technical and don't have a clue about what stuff's out there that might be useful for them, help them to find stuff and configure it for the best experience for them. Personalization again. The other stuff is to help developers find out about stuff, to maybe use some open source libraries, to basically implement accessibility in the best possible ways. And the third way, which is really quite exciting, is an infrastructure for automatic personalization. The vision is you can go to any computer, any kiosk, any phone, and it would be matched in the best possible way to your preferences. So if you want high contrast screen, you want big text, whatever device you go to, that will happen. Uh-huh. And the idea is to provide an infrastructure which will knows your preferences and will perform the best match with the device capabilities to give you the best experience.
I see. So you carry with you this roaming profile of your accessibility needs, and the device adapts as appropriate to those needs.
No, the idea is it's actually stored on the cloud, and obviously there's lots of security, privacy issues like that, as always. But that in a way would be one approach, is you could have your own device, your own remote control configured how you like, and it talked to the device. This is a different approach. This is the approach that when you go to, say, a ticket kiosk, you identify yourself to it in some various ways. One of the trial techniques we got is a ring with an RFID tag in, and you just go, and it can read that. It knows who you are. It goes off to the cloud. You've already spent time saying what your preferred configuration is. I want big text. the cloud, the infrastructure, talks to the device you're on and says, what capabilities have you got for big text? Let's set the best possible one closest this user wants. So it works that way rather than the way you suggested.
And that's something, of course, that beginning part really is an implementation detail. They could use a near field communication with their phone, just tap their phone to the device.
Absolutely.
And then it says, oh, it's this guy again. And then it goes, bop, 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 and it changes itself.
Exactly. The architect tries to be as flexible as possible. So there's a concept of a user listener, which is sort of a plug-in approach, if you like that sort of idea. There are various listeners which will give you different ways. Of course, there's now biometric identification as well coming along. That would be a good one. Mm-hmm. The main thing, I guess, is to avoid the horrors of having to log in, which is an accessibility nightmare in itself. So.
One of the things that happened to me when I started getting into accessibility for banking applications is in my mind, this was before the word gamification became a thing. I'm a bit of a completist when I play games, you know? All the little, you know, open all the little chests and visit all the
I'm just like that. Yeah, I never got anywhere with Lego Star Wars because I just tried to do everything I could.
Exactly. Well, the same thing happens. I think when people who are listening start getting into Aria, they're going to say, gosh, well, is that the right tag for this? And did I properly mark that up? And you're going to become a completist as well. And you're going to want to make sure that all aspects of your website are really accessible to everybody. And I think that hopefully that's what will happen. We'll gamify this in some way.
Give people an achievement for
properly marking up their pages.
Yeah. Well, Mozilla have these open badges, don't they? So maybe you should create the idea is that you can create these sort of little tokens that people can gain. Mm-hmm. Anyone can create one. So maybe, yeah, that's a good idea. We should create one for various stages of website accessibility.
Absolutely. I think
there's a very valid point to make there. If you're not a completist and you're daunted by it, don't worry. Just any little bit helps. Yeah.
Is that true? Really? I mean, it's not something that you have to just, you know, descend en masse onto your application and plug in. You can pick a particular hotspot and try to make it more accessible and sprinkle it here and there and try to make, you know, work from the inside out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess you have to be pragmatic. If you've got a big legacy code base, the best way of doing accessibility is embedded in your workflows from the beginning. Mm. Absolutely. Because otherwise it's like testing. If you leave it to the end, then the costs are bigger than if you do the testing while you're going through the development. Same with accessibility. But any little any improvement can make people happy. I mean, the people are still going to, if something really upsets them, they're going to vote with their mouse and go somewhere else. But
when you're initially, if you have a greenfield project, that's a great time to start making your taxonomy of here are all the controls, here are their ARIA you know, counterparts, their ARIA annotations, and let's ensure and write in our tests that that's being done.
Absolutely. Yes, definitely. And also structure is the other really important one.
Structure is important because you're saying don't just say everything's a div, like H1, H2, this stuff matters.
Yeah. Semantic. And it's also, also at a higher level than that, your content structure, you know, you use, say this is a heading, and this stuff applies not just to, this applies to documents. If you're creating a word, a word processor document, I won't mention a particular technology. you can very easily just change all the styles as you're going through it. And so wherever you've got a heading, you say it's bold and it's a bigger font or a different font. But if you use styles, and apply them to each heading. One, it's easy for you if you want to change something as a content author, but two, it allows the assistive technology to pick up what's a heading. So there's techniques like that, which you really want to embed right at the beginning because, if you do it, as I said, if you do it later, then it's just so much more work.
So it's probably fair to say that if you're doing well-structured HTML5, if you're doing well-structured CSS, then you're in a good position to start getting right into ARIA immediately.
Yeah, if you're somebody, and I hope you are, who is concerned about the structure and using the standards correctly, are you writing good semantic markup, as it gets called, which is just a buzzword for good structure, really, then you're going to find you're just adding a few more extra bits into what you're doing anyway.
So we're going to get a whole pile of links from you, and we're going to put those in the show notes to make sure that people can go out there and learn about accessibility, as well as when they go out there and Google or Google with Bing, they can go and search for not just the word accessibility, but also the number 11, and then Y. That's the abbreviation for accessibility, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And if you want to know why, it's a totally geeky reason. It's because people are lazy typers and there's 11 letters in the word accessibility. So it's A, 11 letters, Y. Same with internationalization. But and it's a fantastic hashtag. It's worth mentioning that there's a great community of passionate, helpful people out there. And if you're on Twitter, use #Ali for searches. You'll soon find out who are the movers and shakers and the people who can help you and what the tools are. It's a great way of finding out more.
Well, and you are one of them, and we appreciate you very much.
Oh, thank you.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.